Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. And Daniel, good to see you this morning.
Happy Monday, Dr. Paul. How are you?
Very good. And good that you're here and ready and raring to go.
That's right.
We're not going to hone in on one subject today. We're going to be talking about foreign policy in general in relationship to the only thing that we're hearing these days, and that is the wall, the wall, the wall, as if that's the only issue that counts. Now, my position on the wall is immigration is very, very important. I think it's mishandled. I'm not against all walls, this sort of thing. So it's important. But what I would like to emphasize here is the over-importance, the obsession with it, to the point where some of the things I consider a lot more important are totally ignored when it comes to the foreign policy around the world, whether it's Syria or Afghanistan or Yemen, all these places that were involved, and now we have Venezuela coming up. And yet 90% of what you hear about is dealing with the wall. But even if we didn't have the wall issue, they wouldn't be talking about the other issues. But in order to do certain things, I'm always suspicious when one issue carries the day. And if you go, if you flip channels through the major networks, it's pretty amazing, you know, how uniform it is.
Yeah.
Same language and everything else. They just go on and on. But anyway, I think we should try to point out some of the areas that need more attention.
And I think that's why Washington is obsessed with the wall, because it's pure politics. The debate isn't really about immigration. It's not about controlling the border. It's about one side wanting to give the president a black eye because they don't like him, and the other side feeling like its political future depends to a degree in this respect on supporting the president on this issue, because they're afraid of re-election coming up here not too far away. So it really isn't about the wall. It is a pure politics. When it comes to issues like you point out that we should be debating, well, unfortunately, both parties agree on those things,
yeah.
So there's not much of a debate.
And there's been a few votes recently. We were sort of pleased with the vote occurred in the Senate that was not so much organized by leadership to, not support the war in Yemen.
Yeah.
And that passed, but of course it didn't become policy. It was Paul Ryan went out of his way to make sure it never came up for debate
in the House. Yeah.
But so it creeps in a little bit. But too often when it's debated, it's usually, well, if they think Trump's doing wrong, it's there to condemn without a debate. And if they agree, that's so rare and so often, the bipartisanship is in disagreement, because even the policies, which is very important, it's the debate isn't driven by that. The debate is driven by hatred.
Yeah.
You know, maybe on both sides, because I think both sides can elicit hatred, but certainly when it comes to anti-Trump hatred, that's a pretty strong stuff.
And that's a good point on the Yemen vote, because you had an insurgency, really, and I think it was led by people like Senator Paul and a few others. There was an insurgency in the Senate on this Yemen vote, and several have been pushing it for a long time. They rose up and surprised most everyone by a decent margin as far as these things go on the Yemen war. And, of course, you talk about in the House, Paul Ryan did everything he could to suppress the vote, and he was defeated. Republicans were defeated. So the question is, Nancy's in power now, Nancy Pelosi's in power. Where's the vote? Why doesn't she allow it?
And now also what we're facing now is the conversion of the liberal Democrats, the progressives. They all of a sudden became the war party. Because they're in leadership in the House now, they're leading the war party.
Yeah.
It used to be that was how you discredited the Republicans, because the Republicans were the war party, and the Democrats on occasion would say, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this as, George Bush stuff, and it'd be critical. But, you know, there was the effort by Trump, saying, bringing the troops home. Big deal. It is a big deal, even though it's only 2,000.
Yeah.
But the issue is important. Back out. What are we doing there? And come home. And all of a sudden, the argument became, well, he didn't get proper permission to do this, even though he's the commander in chief, and even though there's not a declared war, even though he has constitutional obligations to protect troops and pursue the movement of troops and the warmongering, they got hysterical over this, and they went and voted and say, no, you can't do this. So they were going in the wrong way, and at the same time, you know, they concentrate on that, but they do not want a debate, is what they don't want, a serious debate on foreign policy.
Yeah, and then he bucked up against the conventional wisdom in Washington when he announced the troop pullout. But you're right, it is a big deal. It was a big deal. And the Democrats lined up fully in line with the war party. They're partially motivated by hatred of Trump. So anything, if he endorsed free ice cream for everyone, they would say no. You know, they just want to oppose him, but also to a large degree motivated by their support for the continued U.S. military empire. So it is a big debate, and why? Because the U.S. touts the rules-based international order. This is what the world is based on. Well, then, according to the rules-based international order, you don't get to put your troops in another country's soil. Yeah. You know, it goes against that. So it is a big deal. No debate.
It's a contest in propaganda and demagoguery is what it is. And actually, the bad guys won on that one because, you know, the neocons were behind the resistance. Now, the only thing that we've noticed so far, unless you have a different understanding of it, was that... you know, when Graham and a few others, Rubio, went and talked to Trump, we got him to agree, you know, to move slowly, think more seriously about this. And then it was sort of looked like an agreement, you know, that he wouldn't go so quickly. But now there's also the argument of a postage stamp type of, you know, a great in symbolism of keeping one base there in Syria. So if it was an all-out war, it probably doesn't amount to much. But it still is very symbolic of the strings attached, which the neocons want, that we still are very interested in Syria, and Trump has no business moving troops out of a war zone, even though he doesn't have proper authority to be there. You know, constitutional authority, congressional approval, UN authority. We weren't even invited to go there, and yet he does it, and the wrath comes down on him, you know.
And that's one of the things that's so depressing about Trump, because, you know, we had a couple of shows where we were very positive, pro-Trump, good job, attaboy, take him out, this is great. But no sooner did he announce that these troops are coming home, and I mean yesterday, they're coming home, his top employees, his top subordinates came out and said, no, he's not being serious. That's not going to happen. We disagree. Then they went on a tour of the Middle East, Pompeo and Bolton, saying, don't listen to the president. He doesn't know what he's talking about. We're staying there. And Trump did nothing. I mean, talk about showing weakness in the face of this. It's incredible.
You know, Afghanistan is back in the news, and we're talking to the Taliban. My first impression was, why are we talking to the Taliban? You know, if we're there for the wrong reason, we shouldn't be there, and it's a negative, and it's not proper, we should just leave. But no, we're having this. But I think you pointed out there may be, you know, a little bit of optimism. Maybe they are seriously talking about it, and we have to take it if we can find it. 18 years is enough. I mean, there's about as much proof as possible that we're not going to own Afghanistan. And that just rubs the hawk Americans. You know, they think America is great because we never back down and we win all the battles. But since I'm talking about military battles, yeah. But if our recent history counts for anything, we haven't been so successful. And yet this is... you know, an opportune time with, you know, maybe the Congress could have a real debate on Afghanistan and find out should we interfere or at least give advice about this. And they're capable of, and one thing is the financing. That's how Vietnam finally ended. They denied finances, even though that has partial benefit, because sometimes they cheat. You know, administrations will cheat, and they'll get the money someplace else. But so that's another area that they should be debating. But no, 90% of everything on TV is going to be the wall, which, if it's necessary and if it needs to be done, we're talking about years of a project with money we don't even have, you know, this whole thing. So to me, it's annoying that the concentration of the on the wall far exceeds anything else. And I do concede there's some definite importance about dealing with our borders and immigration, and I have my own ideas about that, but I don't like the idea that there's this obsession.
I can't pass by you using the word cheat when it comes to money, because what comes to mind immediately, Elliot Abrams. He's our point man for bringing democracy to Venezuela. He is the poster boy for cheating when Congress says no funds for this. He wants his Contras funded. He's the guy who did it. He's the point man. And now he's back, you know.
Yeah, and but we're going to get some help from Wasserman Schultz. She's still there. She had a little problem running the Democratic Party, but she's proposing a solution to how to get the Venezuelans to morph into a democratic society. So we pick our top socialist progressive that's going to go down there and tell them what to do. What absurdities! You know, that is the kind of thing that happens when people aren't demanding legitimate debates. I mean, she said that, but I don't imagine there's going to be a heck of a lot of Republicans standing up and say, what are you talking about? Because most of the Republicans will not say, well, what are we doing in Venezuela? Matter of fact, I haven't heard anybody talking and criticizing Trump for going into Venezuela.
Nobody, not very many. You talk about, the hypocrisy. Debbie Wasserman Schultz was caught with her hand in the cookie jar. She was literally suborning democracy in the U.S. She was literally cheating to deprive Bernie Sanders voters of having their mandate count when they voted. That's literally what she did. And now she's named, Congress wants to send her down and help bring democracy to Venezuela. It's so absurd.
Well, another issue that did come up and got a little attention in the Congress, and that had to do with NATO. You know, the mere fact that Trump, talked about and emphasized, either weakening NATO or getting out of NATO, which is certainly not the position of his anymore. But they had a vote on that. Don't you dare mess. NATO is sacred. We have to be in NATO. And they won't admit the truth. If you had a debate, they might find out that we're in NATO because we own it. And that's where we get our sort of moral support. As long as NATO says it's okay, go into Afghanistan and we'll pay it and I'll send all the troops that we need. That doesn't happen. But no, don't mess around with NATO. It's been around for a long time. So the Congress is not interested in a real debate on that either.
In fact, they went even further. They had a debate on shutting down debate. You know, they agreed, they voted have no debate. You know, we agreed no debate is allowed on this topic whatsoever. But and going back to Afghanistan, you mentioned that there's not a lot of debate there. There is a little bit of a light at the end of the tunnel in that there are talks between the Taliban and the U.S. I think they were in Qatar, if I'm not mistaken, over the weekend. And there are some tentative agreements that would allow the U.S. to withdraw from Afghanistan. That's great news. It's tempting to gloat over this. You know, it's tempting to say, aha, 17, 18 years of war. But in a way, I almost want to self-censor and not say anything. And if it takes them declaring victory to pull out, if that's what it takes to pull out, do it. Say whatever you want to say as long as we're out of there.
Well, we do hear a little bit of talk about Russia, but it's usually skewed saying that Russia is the monster of the world, has created all the problems, and they've been involved in interfering in elections. Of course, we would never do that. We weren't involved in Venezuela or any other place. But there was the idea of Russian sanctions, which they're on and they're still on. But there was a debate over many sanctions to get removed. And that was an issue that I think Trump won. He wanted to remove it. But the demagogues sort of win this because Russia has been turned into the monster. So if you do anything which makes common sense that, working with Russia or trading with Russia, then you're a Russian stooge. And but he did get, I think he got the sanctions removed from some companies, some sanctions we put on that we shouldn't have put on.
Yeah, and this was a debate. Both the House and Senate agree. You know, there were sanctions put on some companies owned by a particular Russian businessman that they don't like. So they put sanctions on this company saying, as long as this guy's in charge of these companies, these sanctions are going to be on. And so the shareholders, whoever moved and kicked the guy out, he's no longer in charge of the company. He said, okay, we've fulfilled the agreements, we've fulfilled the restrictions, we've fulfilled all of what you wanted to get these sanctions taken up, so let's take the sanctions up. And the Senate and House said, no, forget you. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do that.
My favorite debate, if it ever comes, will be the debate over isolationism.
Yes.
These terrible people in our camp are always accused we're the isolationists. But the true story is the isolationists come from the opposition. And what I'm talking about is the isolation that is created by putting on sanctions, the protectionists, the ones who put on tariffs, and also the people who throw their weight around militarily. And I think we do a few of those things. And then that elicits opposition to us. It elicits hatred toward us. It elicits people who want to retaliate against us. And the common thing is, oh, don't listen to those guys. They're isolationists. You know, they don't want to deal with it. But it's the free market people that aren't the isolationists. Matter of fact, the whole argument about free markets and free trade and sound money is that you bring countries together, and there are less wars when that happens. But no, everybody seems to promote it because you have to hate. And these countries are bad, and anybody who supports Russia, they're in big trouble. And that's not to ever defend some of these people that we talk about, because they have their problems. But the trouble is, the truth is, we have problems too, and we have a moral authority which is greater for us to deal with what's going on here, and that us just forgetting about our shortcomings. How can we lecture and invade countries and get involved in coups like we did in Ukraine and all these things at the same time, lecture others for getting involved? And in comparison, there's a big difference between what we do and what others are doing.
You know, I've been pretty critical these past few days, not only over people who think the U.S. government should overthrow the Venezuelan government, but also I've been critical of people in the U.S. who mouth the official propaganda about Venezuela, you know, the humanitarian crisis and everything. And so they said, well, what would you do then? You know, if you don't like what we're trying to do, we're trying to give these people freedom, what would you do? Well, I would say don't isolate. Don't be isolationist. You got to roll back the clock back to even to 1998 when Hugo Chavez was elected to be president of Venezuela. That's when the U.S. started gearing up to overthrow him. They were successful for a few days in 2002. They've tried again several times. So what would you do? I would not have isolated them for 20 years. Engage them, trade with them, travel, get involved, demonstrate through our actions that we have a system that we believe might be better for them than a system that they might have adopted. But to foist it on them, to isolate them for 20 years, is not the solution. So we can't flip a switch and undo what the neocons and what the isolationist neocons have done for 20 years. But we can say right now that we should not endorse in any way, shape, or form war or war propaganda. Those two both must be struggled against equally important. Dr. Paul?
Very good. And I think by avoiding the discussion in foreign policy that we consider so important, and dwelling on the great debate over the wall, we have, when you look at the cost of this, cost in time, look at the time and energy as it being spent on this so-called debate. Think about the energy expended for this, all the energy from people getting very upset and noisy and competitive, and the media bias and all these things. And how about the money being spent too? There's a lot of money that's involved in that debate, but that's not of any concern. But then this has also brought about a lot of hypocrisy on the debates. You know, just the idea that people 6 months ago loved the war, loved the wall, and loved simple finance, but we really hate Trump. So we've changed our position. You know, and a lot, and it has elicited so much demagoguery. So it's rather sad that this has happened. But I think that the important thing really to recognize that, with avoiding serious discussion on foreign policy means that there will be a retaliation. And I think that's what's coming right now, the isolationism that we have talked about. And this is going to bring people together in opposition. And right now, there's pretty good evidence that it's being built. When the countries like Russia and China and India come together, and Iran, it's a pretty significant block of people. And if they come down and they are working on developing a means of exchange, a monetary system that they can use, and they're using things already when possible, a currency other than the dollar. So that's a significant thing. So this thing is going to keep getting worse. So I would say let's have a more adult discussion about our borders, and let's have a really serious discussion about non-intervention in foreign policy, and talk about a foreign policy that's built on free trade and friendship. That is what we need if we're looking for peace and prosperity. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.